Welcome to the 10th episode of the Tell Me About It podcast. I'm Dr. Susie Godson. I'm a psychologist and I'm the co-founder of the Tell Me Mental Health Service. We started this podcast to give the young people that we support a voice. There are so many stories about mental health in the papers, but you never get to hear from young people themselves. And what these podcasts demonstrate is that mental health is generally a response to very challenging life events and experiences. This podcast covers one of the most difficult topics that we have ever broached, child sexual abuse. If that's a triggering topic for you, then you might not want to keep listening. Today, I'm going to be talking to Hanifa. Welcome, Hanifa. Hanifa's going to tell us her story, and we're going to start at the very beginning. Go back to the very beginning and tell me a bit about your childhood and about growing up and about your life and your family.
Yeah, so as a kid, I was very shy, but other than that, I would say I was normal. I had a normal life until when I was about 4 or 5 years old. So we had a big change in our family then because my cousin moved in with us. So he used to live in Bangladesh. He came over to the UK and came to live with us. He was a teenager at the time. I don't know his exact age, but he was a teenager.
And did you have brothers and sisters growing up? I mean, how many of you were in the house?
Yes, I have 3 older brothers.
Right, so there was 3 big boys and you, just 1 little girl.
Yeah, well, 4. So I have 3 brothers and him, so yeah.
Right, and so what was that like then, suddenly having a cousin? Did he speak English?
Yeah, he can speak English, yes. He was fluent in English.
And did he come to go to school or...?
Well, I was really young, so I don't remember exactly, but he came, to go to school and to work and stuff like that. And, he was, I think, around the same age as my oldest brother. So, yeah, he was a teenager at the time. But, yeah, a bit like a teenager slash young adult, basically.
Right.
And, my parents, like, treated him as if he was their own son. Took care of him, gave him all the love and affection that you give your own son. Like, they really, really treated him like he was their son.
And do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And how did your brothers feel about that?
I mean, they were okay with that, I guess. I mean, they didn't have a problem with it. Obviously, he was our cousin, so, we were living together, so they saw him as a brother as well. So we didn't have a problem with it.
I guess culturally, so it was that a fairly normal thing to happen?
So I'm from Bangladesh, and I think in our culture, it's normal to treat your cousins like your siblings. So, yeah, I think it wasn't too unusual, I guess.
Right. I mean, it's quite a big thing to move from Bangladesh to England when you're in your teens. Quite a big transition to make. So how did it impact your family?
In terms of how it impacted my family, so I'd say it didn't impact the rest of my family all that much. I think it impacted me the most since, when he started living with us, after a while, he started sexually abusing me. So,
Did you know what was happening to you?
I mean, not really. I was a child. I didn't understand any of it. I was about, 5, 6 years old when it started, so I didn't understand at all.
Can you talk about it, or is it too hard to remember?
I can try talking about it, yeah. So, basically when no one else was home or we were in a room together, he would, he would touch me and, he would abuse me. And sometimes he would, so at first I became really close with him and, to the point where, my family would kind of joke that he, was more of a brother than me to my actual brothers. Like, I was really close with him. Like, he would, you know, play with me. He would calm me down when I was crying. And, like, eventually my mum started letting him take me home from school. And so, yeah, right. he would take me home. And before we'd get home, he would take me somewhere else so that he could abuse me without, like, anybody seeing.
So he was basically grooming you?
Yeah, basically, yeah, that's exactly what it was.
And how long did that go on for?
So when I was about 9 or 10, that's when he moved out. So his mum came here from Bangladesh and they moved out together. And they lived, so they went, like, yeah, quite far, so in the suburbs. And so, yeah, that was really, really a huge relief for me, since I didn't have to see him nearly as much. I went from literally living with him to not barely being around him. So, yeah, that was, yeah, so he went around for about, it continued for about 4 or 5 years, I guess.
And by the time he left, did you realise what he had been doing and what was happening?
It's kind of complicated. I feel like I was in denial. Like I would, I mean, when it happened, I would kind of disassociate.
Right.
So, yeah, I just kind of switched my brain off. And, yeah, I was like that, like, throughout a lot of my childhood, like, even at school. If I was uncomfortable or shy or someone was bullying me, I'd just disassociate and just, like, switch my brain off and not deal with it. So, yeah, that was kind of my coping strategy as a child whenever anything bad was happening to me, to just pretend it wasn't happening.
But did you know it was wrong, what he was doing?
It's kind of hard to say when I realised it was wrong. I feel like it was kind of a gradual realisation. I think because I was dissociating, I wasn't even really thinking about it. It wasn't until years later that it kind of all hit me like a truck, like as a teenager.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I spent my childhood kind of being in denial about it, kind of.
And big question, did you ever tell anyone?
So I did tell people eventually. So my parents don't know, but my siblings do know. So, yeah, my siblings and some of my aunts and uncles know about it. And I've told the police. So, yeah. But, yeah, I decided not to tell my parents because I feel like it would just be too hard for them to handle.
Wow. I mean, it's such a lot for a young person to handle. And because it had been going on for so long, did you feel in some way that you were responsible as well?
Oh, very much, yeah. Like, I felt like it was my fault that was happening to me. Like, I was doing something to, like, turn him on. Like, it was my fault that he was doing it to me. That's kind of what I felt like. And, like, when he moved away, I felt so much relief that he moved. But then I felt guilty that I felt relieved. I felt like I shouldn't be feeling like that. I should be feeling, like, sad. I should be missing him. I felt guilty that I wasn't missing him. So, yeah, kind of. To hide the fact that I wasn't missing him, I'd kind of, like, make a big thing out of it and, like, tell everyone, oh, I miss him so much, he's like a brother to me. And I'd fake cry to, like, my parents and stuff. Like, because I felt so bad that I wasn't missing him. I wanted to kind of convince myself, honestly. Yeah.
God, so it's just so confusing, isn't it, for a child of that age, because it's just so hard to work it all out and it had gone on for years. Yeah. And when did you finally tell somebody? What age were you?
Well, it's kind of a long story. So, obviously, I spent my childhood kind of disassociating and pretending it wasn't happening. And then when I was about 16, 17, that's when my uncle, so his father passed away. And, my whole family went, obviously, to a funeral. They went over to their house to comfort them, to see them, and I didn't go. I just refused to go. I just never wanted to see him again. So I just didn't even go to my uncle's funeral. So And yeah, my family were kind of, I mean, I didn't make a big deal out of it, but yeah, it made me feel guilty. And I don't know, for some reason, that was when it all came crashing down on me. Like, it just all hit me like a truck, like, what actually happened, I guess, yeah.
And at that point, then, did you tell somebody?
I originally didn't want to tell anyone, but, after my uncle died, there was a day where I was having a really bad panic attack, and my parents weren't home. And so it was just me and my brothers at home, and my brothers wanted to take me to the A&E because my panic attack was that bad, and I didn't want to go to the A&E, and I was just kind of begging them kind of not to take me, and they were saying, but what's going on, you know, why do you keep having panic attacks recently, they were really worried about me. And then that's when I just blurted it all out. Obviously, it was hard for them. I mean, they cried at first. They were struggling to take it. He was someone they were close to as well. They saw him like a brother, so it was hard for them, obviously.
And how did it impact their relationship with him? Did they ever challenge him about it?
So they just kind of stopped talking to him. I remember my brother telling me that he wanted to challenge him. He felt like murdering him, but he decided to just not see him ever again. Just never talk to him again, because that would be, like, I guess, easier.
Yeah.
And then they helped me talk to the police and stuff. So, yeah.
They helped you to actually disclose it?
Kind of, yeah. It was mainly my therapist, but they helped as well, yeah.
And when did you start seeing a therapist?
So I started seeing the therapist around the time my uncle died. So even like before he died, I was kind of feeling really depressed and anxious, and it was impacting my school life. So
and what was it like? What was the experience of doing therapy like?
At first, I was so overwhelmed, I couldn't even talk to my therapist. So I had to write everything down in a notebook. And so I just write everything down on paper. And then, the first few sessions, I would kind of be like, how do you explain it? Kind of blank. It wasn't like I was emotional or crying or anything, but I also couldn't talk. So I would just have to write everything down on paper. And then the session I had immediately after my uncle died, I was still jotting everything down on paper, but I was crying profusely, like sobbing and hyperventilating. I was really emotional, really anxious.
And was that a kind of a breakthrough then? Were you able to speak after that?
Yeah, I think after that session, I was finally able to slowly start speaking to my therapist.
And what did it feel like to disclose all of this stuff?
It felt like a huge weight being lifted off my chest, just finally, like, coming to terms with everything. And, you know, my therapist helping me understand what happened, reminding me that it wasn't my fault, because sometimes I still felt like it was my fault. So yeah. She reminded me it wasn't my fault, and, you know, helped me deal with it and, yeah, kind of, it helped me understand my own coping mechanisms. And that was really felt like a massive weight just lifted off my chest. It felt really good.
Was it your therapist that encouraged you to talk to the police?
Yes. It's kind of difficult to describe now. At first, the idea of talking to the police terrified me. I was scared that, you know, I would somehow get in trouble for telling the police. And something bad would happen to me. But she explained to me how it works and just slowly eased me into it, I guess.
Was that important, knowing how it would work, you know, knowing what would happen before you did it?
Yeah, that was important, yeah. And also the fact that she was there while I was talking to police helped as well.
Oh, did she go with you?
Yeah, she went with me. So it was So it was in my therapy clinic in a different room. So they have kind of a separate room for that kind of thing. So the police came to the therapy clinic and we went there and to that room. And I was really struggling. Just the idea of like telling the police about it just felt like such a big deal. I was struggling to even look them in the eye. I felt like my vision was going blurry. I couldn't even see them properly. I couldn't even look the police in the eye at all. Like, I have no idea what they looked like. I was looking at my feet the whole time. Sometimes I would talk, sometimes I would write it down on paper, sometimes I would just babble nonsense. Like, it was really hard, but I was really trying to get it all out.
Yeah, and were they nice to you?
Yes, they were really nice and understanding, yeah.
And so what happened to your cousin? Did anything happen to your cousin?
No, nothing's happened as of yet.
Does he know that you've reported him?
No, he doesn't know about it.
He doesn't know yet? How long ago did all of this happen?
So it was months ago. It was maybe 9 to 12 months ago.
And nothing has happened? Nobody has contacted him?
No, nothing's happened yet.
Don't you think that that's really slow?
I'm not sure. Obviously, I don't know exactly how it works, so I'm not sure.
Yeah. And was part of your motivation the fact that he might do it to somebody else?
Yeah, that was a big deal. So, yeah, his sister has two children and I mainly did it because I was worried about them.
And did you tell his sister what he had done to you?
No. So part of it was I was kind of scared that they would be on his side. Some people in my family actually know that he watches child pornography, and like they didn't do anything about that. So I was kind of scared that my family wouldn't really care.
Wow! And did you tell the police that you knew that as well?
Yes, I told them.
Wow. It's amazing that they've done nothing. Like. They presumably know his name and where he lives and...
Yeah, I know where he lives. And
unless they're watching him. How did your brothers respond when they knew that you'd been to the police, that you'd spoken to the police?
It was really hard for me to, finally tell them that I did it. Obviously, they were trying to help me, but they didn't want to pressure me to do it. And when I finally did it, I felt like I was doing something wrong. even though I was doing a good thing, obviously, I was reporting a paedophile, but I still felt like I was somehow doing something wrong. Like I was reporting my own cousin. It felt like I was doing something wrong. So, yeah, they listened to me cry and they comforted me. So that was really helpful.
Yeah. And so, gosh, it's dominated your childhood into adulthood.
Yeah, very much. It dominated, it affected like everything in my life as a child. It even affected like my school life, I think, as well.
Yeah. And now, how are you feeling now? I mean, do you feel you can move past it?
Yeah, I'm trying to move past it. Obviously, I still kind of have flashbacks sometimes, but I mostly just feel exhausted. I spent my whole childhood being on edge, being anxious and in fight or flight all the time. Now I don't have to do that anymore. I'm just exhausted.
Right. And so what are you doing? Like, are you working? Are you studying?
So right now I'm unemployed, but I'm looking for a job. After my uncle died, obviously because my mental health was so bad, I ended up having to drop out of my A-levels because I just couldn't handle doing them while I was going through my mental health stuff. So now I'm trying to go into work.
Are you going to redo your A-levels?
I've been thinking about it, but I kind of don't want to be honest, like going through all that again. If I did, it would probably be good for me, but because I associate A-levels with kind of that part of my life, it's kind of, I don't want to revisit them.
Yeah. And what do you want to do with your life?
I'm figuring that out.
Yeah, but what are you interested in?
That's a really hard question, since I spent a lot of my childhood just trying to survive, so now it's hard to know who I even am or what I'm interested in. I feel like I'm just trying to like learn new things and like allow myself to be interested in new like industries and just learning stuff.
Do you think you're sort of beginning to get to know yourself in a way, because you...
Yeah, I really feel like that, yeah.
Because you were denied that possibility when you were like just surviving.
Yeah, very much feels like that. I feel like I didn't really have a personality as a child, and now I'm finally learning what it's like to have one.
And what did your parents think? I mean, did they not notice that something was wrong or that anything was going on? It seems strange that all of that could have been happening under their roof and they had no idea.
It's kind of complicated. So my mum had some suspicions, but she couldn't, like, she had no way of confirming any of them. And she talked to my dad about it, but because there was no proof, he kind of thought that she was just being paranoid, so they didn't take it any further.
And did they ever talk to you?
No, they never talked to me.
And if they had, would you have told them?
I'm not sure. I think, I honestly, maybe not. I would have probably been scared and just confused.
But surely by the time your mental health was so bad and you were refusing to go to your uncle's funeral, they must have realised that there was some connection with your cousin.
Well, they knew I was going through like a mental health struggle, so they just took it up to kind of my depression and anxiety. They sort of just kind of phase that I'm going through and that I'll get better eventually. That's kind of how they saw it.
Yeah. Do you think that things like sexual abuse of children are so horrific that people can't allow the possibility of that happening into their mind, that they can't imagine it?
Yeah, I very much think so, especially if it's your own family member. Like, I feel like people often think of like sexual abuse as like, you know, some stranger in an alleyway doing it, not your own family member. They don't think their own, like, their own cousin, their own nephew, their own, like, their own flesh and blood could be capable of doing something like that.
Yeah. When you found out that your cousin had also been found looking at child pornography, how did that make you feel?
Well, I was honestly really angry because I didn't know about it until I was a teenager. And, my family kind of were hush hush about it for some reason. They just made me really angry that they didn't want to expose that.
So it felt like a conspiracy to protect him at the expense of everybody else.
Kind of, yeah.
Gosh, I mean, it's a lot, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
In some ways, do you feel that this experience has been just completely horrific? But do you feel strong now because you've survived something that most people just can't even imagine having to go through?
I do think about that sometimes. Like, sometimes I think, at least I'm strong now. But then other times I think, I don't want to be strong, I want to be safe. So it's kind of like a complicated back and forth, like trying to make good of the situation. Like, at least I know about it and I can help other people. But then I'm like, but it shouldn't have happened to me. I should have been safe. I was a child. So it's kind of a complicated back and forth.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I suppose the other thing is that when things like that happen to you, when you're really very small, like 5 years old to 10 years old, you can't even put words on what's happened.
Yeah, we didn't understand the words for it at all. Like, I remember so I can't remember what year it was, but in primary school, we had sex education, and at some point it kind of clicked that what was happening to me was that, but then I just immediately disassociated and didn't do anything or interact with the teacher on anything for the rest of the lesson. So, I feel like whenever anything even to do with sex or anything came up, my immediate response was dissociate. So that made it harder for me to come to terms with what was happening.
And, you know, sort of culturally, how is it sort of handled within your community?
That's something I'm still trying to figure out. Like, because, no one made a big deal out of him having child porn. I'm just confused about, like, how it's even supposed to be handled. I feel like I'm going crazy. I have no idea what normal is.
And, like, you said some of your aunts and uncles know now. And have they spoken to you about it? Or is it just silence?
No, they haven't spoken to me about it.
So how do you know they know? Who told them?
Well, it's kind of complicated, but I kind of heard through gossip. So my brothers kind of, I think some of my other cousins were being abused as well. And then it was kind of, people were just gossiping about it, and then somehow, I'm not really sure.
Not by him, though.
I'm not really sure, honestly.
Right. So other young cousins, or?
Yeah, about the same age as me.
Right. Wow, it seems like there's a bit of a conspiracy of silence around all of this.
Kind of, yeah.
And how does that make you feel?
It's hard to deal with. I'm trying to just accept that that's how it is, I guess.
And are you living at home now, or?
Yeah, I'm still living at home.
Must be kind of confusing to be still in the same... Are you still in the same house as you were?
Yeah, still the same house.
Because it sounds like it's hard when everything is sort of the same. Nothing seems to have changed. Nobody has done anything about you. You've been through this huge journey and nothing has happened.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, on the one hand, I'm like, I get it. Like, what's even supposed to happen? Like, I can't just, expect my whole family to just, go murder him or something. Like, what are they even really supposed to do, I feel like? So
I'd expect something to happen. If somebody did that to my 5-year-old daughter for 5 years, I would expect the police to act more quickly, not wait 8 to 12 months to do anything. I would expect a lot to happen. Do you think you've got quite low levels of trust in sort of the system and family?
Yeah, maybe that might be it, yeah. I don't know, mostly I'm just tired, I guess.
Yeah. How did your therapist help you after you disclosed to the police? Like, did you carry on seeing her?
Yes, I carried on seeing her, yeah. So, yeah, I continued to see my therapist, but I didn't really talk about the, like, police report anymore, just more, my trauma and stuff. It wasn't about the police report anymore.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because it's not, you haven't really had any closure yet.
Yeah, I've just I feel like I've kind of accepted that I won't get closure.
Really?
Yeah, honestly.
What would closure look like for you?
I'm not sure. I've tried thinking about that, but I'm just not sure what I expect closure to look like.
Right. I mean, did you think that your cousin would get arrested?
I was hoping for that. On the other hand, I was kind of scared how my family would react if you did get arrested. Like, and I was already, I'm kind of worried it would create drama in my family.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. Yeah. I think for me, I don't really care all that much about getting closure for myself. I mean, I think that might have to do with my low self-esteem. But for me, the main thing is that it doesn't happen to any other children in my family. Like I said, his sister has two young children, and like my main concern is them too.
Yeah. And would you speak to his sister?
Probably not, just because I don't know how to.
Yeah.
I just don't know how I'd even go about it. Yeah, for my own sanity, I've just been trying to not think about too much and just focus on healing.
And so what are you doing to help yourself heal and to help yourself feel better?
Now, the main thing is I'm just allowing myself to exist. Like, that sounds really weird, but, like, not being in survival mode is something I feel like I have to get used to. So just allowing myself to exist. And learning what my personality is. And I'm just trying not to think about the whole situation too much. I don't really think about the enclosure because I just want to focus on healing, I guess. So I'm just like kind of allowing myself to exist.
And is part of that allowing yourself to feel things?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that's a big part, yeah. Allow myself to have emotions outside of like survival mode, outside of fight, flight or fight. Like, yeah, I think that's, I guess, helping.
Yeah. And what's that like? Because, you know, you said several times that when everything was going on, you just dissociated. So you just shut down and stopped yourself thinking anything or feeling anything. So to suddenly be in touch with your emotions and allowing yourself to feel joy and pain and boredom and all of the daily changes that everybody has in their emotional state. Is that quite?
I think a big part of it is allowing myself to have opinions. Like, that sounds weird, but yeah, like as a child, all my opinions were just based on whatever, like what was expected of me or what would keep me safe. So I'd pretend I loved my cousin even though I was scared of him. Even at school I hated school, but I pretended I liked school because that was just easier. So instead of being honest about my feelings, I would kind of assume whatever personality was safest. So I'm just kind of learning how to have opinions and think about things for myself. Like as a child, if you ask me about pretty much anything, I would either answer what would, I guess, keep me the safest, or if there was no answer, I would just say, I don't know. Like you could ask me what I want to be when I grow up. I'd just say, I don't know, I don't really care. What's your favorite hobby? I don't know. I don't really care. What's your favorite movie? I don't know. I don't really care. Like, I didn't have a personality at all. So right now I'm very much just learning how to care about things.
Wow. Are you also learning to say no?
Very much, yes.
What does that feel like?
Really good.
Does that affect your relationship with your parents, you know, suddenly becoming more assertive? And
it's kind of, I don't know how to describe that. I mean, yeah, I guess. I mean, so my parents know that recently my mental health has been really bad, so they've been patient with me. So I wouldn't say they've, like, you know, had a problem with me saying no or anything, but they do think I've changed a lot.
Well, I suspect they probably think that's great.
Hopefully, yeah.
Especially if you're happier.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
You think you're happier? You're not sure?
Maybe. I mean, happiness is a journey, I guess. It's not just like whether you're happy or not.
It's true. Although I've known you for a bit and I think you've changed in the time that I've known you. you've become more confident.
Oh, thank you. That's really nice to hear.
And obviously, I know you've been using Tell Me, and has that been helpful?
Oh, very much, yeah. Just like helping people who are very similar to me kind of feels like helping myself in a way. Like I'm giving them advice that I would want someone to give me, but I wouldn't allow, like I wouldn't give that advice to myself because I feel like I don't deserve it. But then through giving them that kind of advice, I realize I do deserve it. So it's really mentally like really helpful for me.
That's such a lovely way of framing it, actually. So it's not getting advice or support, it's giving advice and support.
Yeah, for me, I think giving advice and support helps more than getting it.
Yeah. And I know that you're keen on topic tagging. Can you explain how that helps?
If you have a specific topic that you like, I mean, for example, if I'm having flashbacks and I want to see posts about sexual abuse, then I'd go to that tag, and just reading other people's posts helps me feel like I'm not alone, and it genuinely makes me feel better.
Mm. Are you surprised by how many young people using Tell Me have had similar experiences?
Honestly, not really. For me, it was just my reality, so I can accept that it was other people's reality as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that's why peer support works, is because, yeah, you know, what seems like a Daily Mail headline to most people is certain young people's reality, and being able to talk anonymously about it. There isn't very many places where they can do that, you know, anonymously and safely. Do you still have a therapist or?
I don't currently have a therapist since I was referred for a different kind of therapy, and it's taking a while for that to kind of happen.
And what kind of therapy is that?
So that's like trauma specific. So before I was having just general talking therapy.
Right.
But yeah, I was referred for trauma-specific therapy, and I haven't gotten that yet.
Right. And is that in adult services now?
I guess so, yeah.
And do you know how long you'll be waiting for that?
No, I don't. Part of me just doesn't even really care about therapy anymore. Like, I think I'm just tired. So at this point, I don't even care if I get the therapy or not.
And also, do you think that doing the therapy just kind of keeps it all alive, and you are now in a process of trying to put it behind you?
Maybe. I think that might be it, maybe.
Yeah. Also, so much of it depends on the therapist, don't you think?
Yeah, so much.
Did you like your therapist?
Yes, my therapist, my therapist was from the same ethnic background as me. She was a Muslim like me, so finding someone like that was really helpful. I felt like, you know, she just understood me, like, immediately.
Do you think that was really important? Did she understand the kind of cultural anomalies around what had happened in a way that you feel a different therapist might not have?
Yeah, I guess she understood, like when I talk about how my family reacted to it, she understood that very well because she knows how like Asian families are.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, I think we've kind of covered everything. It's been a really fascinating and probably quite difficult conversation for you.
Thank you.
And thanks for doing it. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm glad I did it. Thank you.
But you are doing amazingly well. Honestly, when I first met you, you would barely speak, and now you're so much more confident.
Thank you.
It's amazing. It's really good to see. Thank you so much, Hanifa.
Thank you. I'm really glad I did this.
Oh, it's fantastic. I'm so glad you did it too. It's really important. Well done. If you or anyone you know has been affected by the issues raised in this podcast, you can call the NSPCC helpline on 0808 800 5000 and you can talk to a dedicated child protection specialist who'll be able to advise you and help you to take any necessary action. You can also contact the children's social care team at your local council, and obviously just call 999 if you think a child is at immediate risk.